name is Jane Galford Johnson, grave 345, cemetery 1, buried 1912. I was living in Pike County, Ohio, when I was admitted to the asylum in 1911. But I'm not the only person named Jane Johnson buried under a number on the asylum grounds.
From WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio, you're listening to Who Lies Beneath the Asylum. I'm Sherry Russo. This is a podcast about restoring dignity and respect by giving a voice to the voiceless. Jane Johnson is a pretty common name. So common, in fact, that there are two people buried on the asylum grounds with that name. There are also many other people, past and present, who go by Jane Johnson. So when looking up public records and trying to learn the life story of someone with that common of a name who lived so long ago, you can understand how that could be pretty difficult. Retired library archivist and asylum cemetery researcher Doug McCabe joins us now. Doug, when you were doing your initial research on the Jane Johnson buried under number 345, things got a little confusing. Tell us about that.
Well, as you've noted, one can easily be confused when trying to research someone who has the same name as other people and might even come from the same county or town and maybe around the same age even. In this case, I just flat out goofed on this one. And that wasn't the first time either. Professional genealogist Patrick Riley out of San Diego, California, ended up with a strange contact with him, because I found that he had ancestors buried in the asylum, and it turned out then, yeah, he's a professional genealogist, and he turned out to be especially helpful,
I bet,
in finding errors that I'd made even before the database went public.
Okay, so tell us about the error that you made with Jane Johnson.
Well, that's all thanks to Danielle, who contacted me about the error and showed me her evidence. And when I double-checked that data, I could see that she was absolutely right, and I was really, really wrong.
Okay. So did the information that you had originally attributed to the Jane Johnson buried under number 345, did it belong to the other Jane Johnson buried at the asylum, or was that information for somebody else altogether?
Well, to add to my embarrassment on this, as far as I can tell, the Jane Johnson, the Jane that I had picked, was never at the asylum.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so common names can be a big problem. I mean, I've mentioned before, you know, I've done some of my own family history research, and you know, we have an Italian last name, so it's kind of unique. But there would be times when, you know, I would run into another Italian patriarch of a family who had the same first and last name as my relative, and it can get really kind of confusing.
Oh, absolutely, And when they're living in the same place or the same area, I mean, you really, well, and then the other thing too is families often carry on names, you know, like honor the grandmother or honor the uncle or something with a similar name or the exact same name, even middle names. And now you have to really look close at age, location, you know, and any other clues you can find to be sure you've got the right person. And even then, it's still easy to screw up. And I'm a good example of that.
Now it's time to hear Jane Galford Johnson's story through a first-person style account with the help of voice actor Karen Chan and Jane's great-great-great-granddaughter, Danielle Gemperline.
I was born in Pike County, Ohio, with my father, John J.W. Galford, who was an innkeeper, my mother, Roxy, and my sisters, Susanna and Sally.
Jane also worked as a servant for a period of time. When she was a young woman, she married Francis Johnson, and they had four children, only one of them, who is my great-great-grandmother, that's Nancy Helen Johnson, who married a man by the name of William Henry Shy. Only Nancy survived to adulthood. Nancy actually predeceased Jane. Nancy passed away about 1906, 1907, and Jane lived until 1912. So I can imagine that, you know, losing all of your children like that, Anne must have had a huge impact on her. I mean, I don't have kids, but I can imagine that that is such like a traumatic experience too. Even though it was more common back then to have like only not all of your children make it to adulthood, that still is painful.
My husband Francis was a farmer, and we lived in both Pike County and Scioto County during our marriage. But in 1911 is when I went to live at the Athens Asylum.
She was a patient at this mental institution at the Athens Asylum, and had been admitted there about 1911 because she was wandering outside basically at all hours of the day and night, which to me, obviously, we can't know for sure what exactly that would translate to. But I think of things like dementia. So this is in the Portsmouth times. So Jane and her husband, they eventually move to the Scioto County, Portsmouth area, where the family sort of settles. And that is where their descendants live. Some of her descendants live to this day. That is my dad's hometown. So I have the actual text here. Mrs. Johnson, before being sent to the hospital, would wander away from home at all times of the day and night. So to me, that does kind of sound like maybe since she was an older woman, maybe she was suffering from some kind of dementia and her sense of like day and night was off, getting lost. And you can imagine that at that time in, you know, 1911, 1912, you know, our medical knowledge and understanding is different. So I can only imagine that that was the only option that her family felt that, you know, that was the only thing that, you know, they could do to help her. Like, I always think that, like, even though terrible, terrible things happen with institutionalization, that a lot of times the people that were involved were just trying to do the best with the information that they had to help the people that they loved. And so that's kind of how I, you know, see it.
I was in my late 60s when I passed away at the asylum and was buried under grave number 345. I was the only member of my family to be buried at the asylum. But as the years went on, other members of my family became patients there.
Her granddaughter would later be a patient there. Actually, two of her granddaughters. There is a family history of mental illness like depression and anxiety. Obviously, those aren't the only things that people were hospitalized for as far as like in institutions like asylums. There was a much broader range of diagnoses.
But knowing where I am buried and knowing the family history is helping Danielle make sense of things in the present day.
It's a hard history, and it's one I can understand not wanting to talk about. And however, when you lose that sort of knowledge, you just kind of wonder when you're more separated from it, sort of, why are things the way they are? Sort of, it can give us more insight into how we live today. I mean, the past is never gone. We're always impacted by it in some way. Because even if we don't like to think about it, there are things like generational trauma, and we are absolutely connected to the past. So I've always been really interested in that. Like I said, my undergrad's history, I work in the museum field. So I guess it was just sort of a natural outgrowth of my interest, just sort of wanting to know more about the lived experience of people in the past. Because, you know, one day, our actions today, our experiences today will be impacting people 50, 100 years from now. And there'll still be that through line because there's always a through line from the past to the present, even if it's not necessarily clear. And it isn't like, I don't know how I want to describe it. It isn't like a zero. I don't think zero sum game is the right word, but it's not necessarily solid. But you can see the patterns throughout times. Like what I like to think of is history doesn't repeat, it rhymes. So we can see, well, where can we go from here? Where have we been in the past? And how can we improve the world in the future and live our lives in a way that both respects and honors and improves upon the experiences of all these different people that preceded us?
Joining us now is Lisa Skeens. Skeens is an associate professor of social work at Ohio University and is a therapist. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sherry.
Lisa, let's talk about this idea of generational trauma. What does that mean exactly?
Sure. When we talk about generational trauma, there's a lot of new exciting research in this area. This is actually a different way of looking at how trauma transcends through different generations. So this is looking at suffering that is usually of a collective nature caused by very extreme or prolonged issues that are traumatic. So it could be a larger oppressive situation such as slavery or survivors of concentration camps. It can also be where there is a historical pattern of abuse within family systems. So it can be, you know, all kinds of different things. But this is actually a psychobiological issue where some of the thoughts, feelings are transmitted through generations, through stories, through behaviors, through parenting styles. But interestingly, they're finding there's also a genetic composition to this, that sometimes we're seeing symptoms of trauma in children from different generations of their family. It's viewed as what we call an expressed genetic condition. So there's definitely a biological component to it, which has created a lot of interest.
So in your opinion, how can learning the trauma and experiences of your ancestors help you deal with the generational trauma in the present? And is it something you can overcome and break once and for all?
Sure. Well, that's a great question. Certainly in the world of therapy, one of the greatest things that we can do is break cycles of violence, abuse, dysfunction, and trauma. So I do think that it is very important that people speak openly around the generational experiences and trauma, because even the narrative piece of that, of telling the stories and having different narrative approaches to that, where people could process it and see how people have grown through generations, that part of it is important. Also, understanding the genetic aspect as well of family is very important, because people can be more proactive to identify some of those symptoms that may have been passed down, and perhaps get treatment or identify those pre-existing symptoms before they turn into a crisis situation.
Well, that leads really nicely into my next question, is because we know that mental illness is genetic. So does it surprise you to hear that Jane's descendants were also treated at the Athens Asylum?
No, it doesn't surprise me. And again, you know, there, as we always say, there's a nature and nurture aspect to this. Certainly, we know that mental illness is hereditary and biological, and it's also social and emotional and culturally transmitted. So, for example, if there are children that see their parents who are in domestic violence situations or community violence situations, they may form anxious attachments or different kinds of relationships with their parents. So sometimes part of that too is, you know, if you look at attachment theory and how people relate to the different elements of parenting and generation.
So I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you encourage your patients to learn about their family history and to uncover that generational trauma?
I do. I think each case is very different. So if someone is very early in their treatment for trauma, that is something that would need to be done very cautiously and carefully. We wouldn't want to overwhelm someone with history that they're not able to process yet. But I think over time, again, that can be very empowering. And there are certain methods, for example, such as narrative therapy or narrative exposure therapy, which really help to tell the stories, but also help us visualize the strengths and the resiliency that occurred from those different situations. So that can also be very powerful.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much again for sharing your insight and your wisdom and your expertise on this. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Doug is back with us now. Now that we've heard Jane Gulford Johnson's story, I'm wondering what you can tell us about the other Jane Johnson that's buried at the Athens Asylum.
Well, that second Jane was admitted January 27th, 1874, as patient number 12 from Jackson County, Ohio, and she was admitted at the age of 28. She had been a resident of Hamilton Township, but was a patient at Longview Asylum in Cincinnati from May of 1871 to February of 1872. She died in 1892 and is buried at Cemetery No. 1 in Grave No. 102 at the Athens Asylum. She does show up in the 1880 census as 31 years old, a native of Ohio, married, insane, and at the Athens Asylum. Unfortunately, with such a common name and so little information specifically about her, I haven't been able to come up with more about her. But I should mention that prior to the opening of the Athens Asylum in 1874, mental patients from Southeast Ohio were sent to Longview, which was quite a distance from family and friends.
How are you able to determine, you know, when you're, especially when you're dealing with a similar name like this, how are you able to determine if you have the correct information? Is there any way to really be sure?
Well, it in some cases it's on a wing and a prayer. In other cases, and that's especially true when you can't really come up with much information at all. And most of the time, when I would run into something like that, I wouldn't even guess or speculate. With Jane Johnson, it looked so good what I had found, and I fooled myself, frankly. And again, you know, thanks to Danielle in this case, and other people in other cases, I've been shown to be goofing up, and it's wonderful to be able to fix it, because I don't want to put something on one person that isn't true.
Of course not.
That's even worse than coming up with really no information at all.
Do you know if there are many others of the same name buried at the asylum?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay.
Just going through the admissions records, and again, this only goes from 1874 to 1913, there are 6 Allens, 6 Andersons, 8 Browns, 7 Campbells, 19 Davises, 7 Evanses, 8 Halls, 14 Johnsons, since we were talking about Johnson, 21 Joneses, 3 with the same first name, 9 Kellys, 10 Martins, 17 Millers, 9 Powells, 7 Reeds, 26 Smiths, also 3 with the same first name.
Wow.
10 Stewarts, 11 Taylors, 9 Thompsons, and 6 John Does.
Oh, geez. So there's a lot of work to be done on those more common names.
Yeah, and there are several of those where, like I said earlier, if I can't be really sure I have the right person, then I really have to just let it go until I can either find more obscure information somewhere else or just give up and move on.
Well, it looks like this mix-up that was discovered by Danielle made it where we got to learn about 2 women buried under numbered tombstones who deserve to have their stories told. So thanks, Doug, for your work sorting out the tale of the 2 Jane Johnsons, and thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks.
I am no longer just grave number 345 in Cemetery 1 at the Athens Asylum. My name is Jane Galford Johnson.
Now we turn to you. We now know the names and stories of both Jane Johnsons, but there's also much more work to be done to give a voice to those who were voiceless. We want to hear your stories about long-lost relatives in your families who you believe may be buried under a numbered tombstone at cemeteries across the country. We'd love to hear your story and share it and see if the work done here in Athens might lead you to some answers and maybe even a name on their grave marker. Email us at wholiesbeneath@woub.org. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other. Who Lies Beneath the Asylum is a production of WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio. Written by me, Sherry Russo. Adam Rich is our audio engineer. Artwork by Sean Anderson. Special thanks to Doug McCabe and Lisa Skeens for contributing their knowledge and voices to this podcast, and Karen Chan for her work as the voice of Jane Galford Johnson. If you like the show, please rate and subscribe or visit woub.org to learn more.